Hey, what's up? You're listening to Talking Off the Couch, where we talk about it being okay to not be okay. And we have real talk about mental health and wellness within the communities of color. Just a reminder, this podcast is not to be put in place for your mental health counseling. So please find a therapist in your area. And if you need additional resources, please find those resources on our website, www.talkingoffthecouch.com. Now, with all that being said, let's get to talking. Hey, my TOTC peeps. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you are have been having such a great week. I hope the weather has not been too bad for some of you all. I know here in Dallas, we've been having some what we would consider fall-like temperatures. So we've been in the 40s and just a little rain and mist. But other than that, still trucking along. We are officially in November. So we are officially in holiday season, or as business people like to call it, the fourth quarter. So I hope you are continuing on with preparing your goals for 2019. I'm so excited to introduce my guest to you today. Her name is Anita Washington. She has a master's in education as well as her MBA. She is the host of the TV show That Anita Live and the Emotional Happiness Podcast, which provides a platform for women to learn, laugh, and more importantly, heal emotionally by learning from the challenges and successes of others. She is also a former school and community agency counselor and creator of the 7-Step Method. Anita has helped guide people from the ages of 11 to 50 through their own life issues, personal transformations, and professional endeavors. Help me welcome Anita. Anita, how are you today?
Thank you very, very much for sharing your platform with me. And hello to all of your listeners out there. I am great.
I am so excited to have you on the podcast for what we're going to talk about, because this is holiday season. And so we are going to discuss just about family dynamics, and boundaries and a host of other things. And I just think you are the perfect person to help us today with this, because you know it's a struggle for a lot of people.
Yes, a big struggle.
So I am going to ask you to just tell the listeners just a little bit more about you besides what I've shared, because I know we all have just, you know, our bios, but there's always so much more to us. So just share a little bit more with the listeners.
Well, I am based in the DC area, and I love helping other people through their own life transformations. There's a great deal right now going on in society because technology is moving us faster than we have ever moved before. At no other time in history have we been impacted by so much in our personal spaces. You know, everything is on a phone, on the laptop, on the radio. It's in your face all day long. Mm-hmm. And right now, mental health is paramount for people. And the family is a structure in where you either receive it, where you receive that self-help and that nurturing that you need, or you don't. The family is the nucleus that can be a strong foundation, or it can wreak havoc on your life.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. And I don't think people realize, or either we have forgotten, how important family is and just that village, that support system, and just the shaping that you get from having a family like that. And so we're going to dive right on in. So first, Anita has a book that has a lot of great information. It is called Family Is Not, you hear me? Family Is Not Everything. How to Minimize Their Mess, Maximize Your Happiness, and Enjoy Emotional Baggage Breakthroughs. So with that, let's talk a little bit about family dynamics and how we can learn to set boundaries. Because I know in your book, you talk about the emotional baggage and the importance of boundaries. So how, first of all, how did the book come about?
the book came about because, really for me, out of frustration, because I got very frustrated watching the people around me suffer from poor family dynamics and not putting themselves first, not valuing themselves, not considering themselves worth a healthy life. And I know the techniques that I used with my counseling clients and also the techniques that I use for myself, because my family is not perfect. So to share those with other people, I decided to put it in a book to help people have stories that they can relate to, but also the steps that they can use to heal. And it's a 7-step process that is detailed in my book. There are trauma stories. There are lessons learned. I share very intimate details and raw information in this book because we need to get back to being more, I guess, neighborly and transparent with each other. Everything right now is about so much of floss and gloss and being snatched and, mm-hmm. and always appearing to be perfect. Right. But we all know, you peel back that Mac or that Mary Kay and you flick those fingernails, off. We are all human dealing with a lot of the same issues.
Very much so. And I know in the book, and I've said it many times on this show, and other guests have said it plenty of times on this show, is that whole mentality of what happens in this house stays in this house has got to be relinquished. Like, it's got to go.
Right. Right. It does. It really, it does. That is a part of the shame and guilt cycle that keeps people bound in dysfunctional behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to let it go because it's happening. One, it's happening in every household, but now it's not being held in the household, and it's coming apart in clubs, in schools, at work environments. It's becoming very detrimental for all the people that are around.
Right.
You know, it's not just, you know, back in the day, Big Mama could keep that one cousin contained at the house. But now mm-hmm. that cousin, you know, that cousin or that uncle or that aunt is coming loose, and they're coming loose in places and making it very dangerous for people to enjoy their lives.
Very true. And I wanted to focus on, because when you mentioned that, that took me right back to the emotional baggage that you talk about in the book. Just for you, can you let the listeners know, what is emotional baggage?
Emotional baggage is all of it's self-doubt. It's negative thinking. It's all of the things that happen that keep you from pursuing those big goals and those deepest dreams that you have. Because coming up as a child, you may have been told, well, you're not going to be nothing when you grow up. So now as an adult, because childhood trauma turns into adult dysfunctional behavior, even though you may not be hearing that statement anymore, it is so deeply embedded into your emotions, your subconscious, your own personal thoughts, that when you try to go after a goal, it stops you. It mm-hmm. freezes you in your tracks because it's that negative cycle that you hear in your head playing. Oh, who are you to think that you can try that? No, you don't need to be going over there. Those people don't want to be bothered with you. It's all internal. Because that voice that we heard as a child comes up until it turns into our self-talk as an adult.
Right. And I don't think people connect the dots. And that's why, you know, I tell people all the time, that's why it's good to go to a counselor. Because you could be going to a counselor to figure out, why do I have decision-making issues? How come I can't do this and that? And it will go back and you will find out it stems from something, like you just said, someone might have told you that now enters in with self-doubt, because self-doubt is so heavy. And everyone experiences it, though. You know, even the most cockiest person experiences self-doubt at some point. It might not be to the level of some others, but self-doubt can be so debilitating.
Yes, and everybody experiences it, but you shouldn't let it stop you.
Right.
You got to know how to take a hold of it, replace it with a positive thought about yourself, and keep going.
And with you saying that, that or leads me to want to talk about very quickly in your book, you talk about self-awareness, because when we talk about self-doubt, you just said you have to be able to push through. And so personally for me, I know that I have self-doubt. Of course, we're doing this podcast. You know, when certain clients come in, we think about it like, okay, how am I going to help them? Or just when we want to further along in our therapist's career, because of course, there's so much more than just sitting in a chair helping others. You have to become aware that you have this doubt or that you're feeling some type of way. And in your book, you state, becoming self-aware will empower you to realize your priceless value and will lift loads of worry and stress off your shoulders.
Yes, it will.
I think that is such a valid statement.
Yes, it will. Nobody should know you better than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know yourself, you know your limits, you know your thought processes, which means you know where your weakest points are and where you need some help with that strength.
Right.
When you become self-aware, you become unstoppable.
That is very true. And I love to help my clients become self-aware. It doesn't matter what they coming in about, I can help them all become self-aware. And is that something that you practice as well with your clients?
Very much so. Very much so. And I no longer formally counsel. Now I coach.
Mm-hmm.
But the self-awareness process is the same. And we're two tactics. One, journaling.
Yes.
Because in freestyle journal, don't journal like you're writing a paper you're going to hand into your English teacher.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
just write. It doesn't matter what it looks like. You need to be able to read it.
Yeah, that's it. That's the most thing.
It doesn't matter whether or not subject verb agreement, sentences, periods, none of that matters. Just write your emotions. Because later on, once you've flushed all that negative energy through and you're no longer carrying it, you can go back to those pages and read and say, okay, what may have happened in my past that caused this limiting belief?
Mm.
And it will unlock it for you instantly. One of the steps that I talk about in my book is called life mapping.
Mm-hmm.
That's the very first step, because I need people to discover, uncover those past events that caused the limiting beliefs that they live their lives within now. And once you get the key to that lock, life is grand.
Yes, it is. It'll blow your mind in the first point, but then it's like, oh, wow. And I agree with you with journaling. Like most, you know, I have a journal that I'm coming out with, and it's all about learning how to heal, but being free with your writing. Like,
yes,
not just, you know, like you said, writing as if you're turning in a paper. Be free with your writing, but also reminding the people to go back and read and see what actions have you put into place to change what you wrote. Because oftentimes we write and then that's it. And then, you know, we don't go back. We don't try to change it, or we don't say, what do I want to make different? And I think that doing that journaling, like you said, along with your life mapping can be so phenomenal for a lot of people.
Journaling is great because it gives you something to look back on. Later on, you can go back to it and read and look.
Mm-hmm.
But the same thing with anger. And where people need to learn how to process and release their anger. So many people stay quiet about it. Like right now in the work environment, it's a performance evaluation season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when they come out of their manager's office, they come back to their cube, they sit down and they say not a word for the rest of the day. That energy affects the entire office because everybody's getting their performance appraisal done. So everybody knows what's going on. They know you're pissed. They can feel your anger, but you shouldn't come back the next day and the next day and the next day in that same mood, carrying that same energy.
Right.
So even if you need to go into your car, turn the music up, shout, holler, get that negative energy out of you and off of you. Your car, your house, just so long as one, you're alone, and two, just the most important thing, be honest with yourself while you're getting that energy out of you and off of you.
Yeah.
Honesty. Don't color it. Don't put it in metaphors. Don't try to make it symbolism. Clear, transparently honest.
So Anita, if you are willing, will you let us know or tell us a little bit about your family dynamics and how you learned to set boundaries with them.
Well, my family dynamics. The host is laughing because she's read my wonderful book. I start with the parents, and where my father was a homicidal alcoholic, mm-hmm. my mother was neglectful, and my brother was both physically and emotionally abusive. I grew up in that environment. When I say homicidal, my father tried to set the house on fire 3 times, and I detailed that in my book. My brother was physically and emotionally abusive, and where it was name calling, it was, I could be just sitting on a telephone laughing and talking with one of my friends, and he just come into, because back then it wasn't cell phones. We just had right. that one phone in the kitchen on the wall.
Mm-hmm. That was either black, white, or yellow.
Right. Right. Snatched the phone out of my hand and hang it up. For no reason whatsoever. Didn't need to use a phone. Wasn't waiting on a phone call. And then the extreme case is when he started by beating on me in the middle of the night. I could be asleep in the house. I could be just sitting in the den watching television. And he would just commence to pounding his fists into my flesh. Mm. I say that my mother was neglectful because when I would tell her and express these things to her, she would say, well, that's just how he is. Or she would turn her back to me and just start singing. For me, as the child, that was neglectful because right. she didn't deal with the situation. She didn't do anything to stop it from happening. And setting boundaries for me became one paramount for my own mental and emotional health, because anytime I was exposed to them, it was like a merry-go-round, you know. At the fair, when you see the merry-go-round and the horses on it go up and down, up and down. Mm-hmm. I was always in a state or a cycle of being abused and then having to go through the techniques and the tips to repair myself. Having another event, going through the techniques and the tips. Having another event. I had to get off. Because the last event, I looked myself in the mirror and said, Nita, this is now your fault. Because mm-hmm. you keep coming back to this family knowing that nothing has changed. And when you keep doing the same thing over and over, Miss Therapist, what do we call that?
We call yes, it insanity. Is. And I'm quick to tell my clients, I don't work with insane people. I know people are like, people go to therapy crazy. No, they are not. They are one of the smartest people because they figure it out. But right. if you come into my practice and we are talking about the same thing over and over again without a change or without a resolution, mm-hmm. we have now ventured into insanity, and I don't do it.
And so I had to come to a place of no contact.
Mm, yeah.
Because if you have a family and where when you express to them, look, we are now all grown. And the way that you treat me is despicable and I don't appreciate it. Would you stop doing and give them examples? Stop doing A, B, and C. It's disrespectful, it's dismissive, and that is not an expression of love. My family would blow it off and just keep doing it. But if you have people in your life that will regard what you say, listen to you, and put in the effort to change that behavior, keep those people. Having to go no contact is the extreme, but mm-hmm. it's something that I had to do. So that's how I learned to set my boundaries.
Well, and you know what? At the end of the day, like you said, you have to take care of you. You have to take care of yourself mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I know so many people, and maybe some of the listeners, feel, especially in our culture, feel like blood is thicker than water. You ride for your family. You don't do what you just said you had to do. You figure it out. You might limit your time with your family. You know, people come up with all different types of ways. And at the end of the day, what works for you works for you. But if you really have to detach, then you have to detach.
Because those are excuses.
Mm-hmm.
Because the key is the behavior continues and keeps happening.
Right.
There's never a time where there is a healthy interaction.
And you can't expect for other people to learn. Because when you mention excuses, that's what I think of when will they learn? Or when will they understand? or when will they get it? They, if they're not trying to, they're not going to.
Right.
And so that's where you have to do the work and stop trying to worry about when they're going to get it or when they're going to understand. Or I know you hear this too. Surely they know X, Y, and Z is incorrect. No, if that's not how they are thinking, then they don't know that that is incorrect behavior. They might feel like it's right and you're wrong. And so when you made that decision to completely detach from your family, how did you process that and work through that? Because I know so many people think that you have to have your family, but I also know that the Lord will surround you with other people that become family.
Yes, he does. We get up and go, we get up and go to church once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Pray, kneel, jump, shout, whatever your worship process is involved in. But do you actually know what the words in between the pages say? Because in order for, in the Psalms, it says, when my mother and father forsake me, the Lord will hold me close. In
right.
order for that to be there, God had to know that situation was going to occur. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to need that verse. And in this case, that somebody was me.
Yeah. And it happened in the Bible anyway, where people had to leave their family or their family turned their back on them. And he was like, cool. I got some people over here that's going to be your family, that's going to take care of you, that's going to do this. And their positions went surpass what it would have been if they stayed in their families.
Right. And we have to learn to accept that.
Yeah.
Because there are positive role models in our lives. We're surrounded by them. We're surrounded by people that will pour into us in a healthy way. But because they're not blood, people want to disregard the importance of that attention or that nurturing. But if that person is giving you their time, that is precious.
Right. Yeah.
And that is something to be grateful for.
Very true. I mean, I know my best friends are my sisters. Like, and when I say that, I don't mean my biological sisters. I mean, they are what I would consider my sisters. My older cousin is what I would consider my sister. And you don't know. And some of my friends and people from church, I consider them my family. Like, you know, you come to my house, you know where everything is to get you some water or whatever. You go in the refrigerator without asking me, hey, you family, you know? And so I think that somebody, if not more than one person, needed to hear what you just said, because there's so much stress and anxiety as well as depression surrounded around this time. Because people start thinking about having to go through this motion or go to these toxic families.
Go to the family that enjoys your company and respects you as a human being. That may not be your biological family. Because understand, if you ride for blood and blood's thicker than water and all these other cliches that we have, they wouldn't be treating you so nasty.
Right.
That goes both ways. So when you decide what to do with your holidays, make sure it is healthy for you. That's number one. So you don't go around your family at all and you spend your holidays around the families of your friends. Beautiful. If you choose to take this time period for rest and relaxation to replenish, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure, number one, that it is healthy for you. That's what's most important.
And let me tell you, I do it all the time. I done told y'all plenty of times, my listeners, there's nothing wrong with being selfish. I feel that word has been just, you know, sometimes the way it's used is correct. Mm-hmm. But for me, when I'm selfish, I have to focus on me and take care of me. And there is nothing wrong with that. And I'm not, when I do that, I'm not taking away from anybody else though. And I think that's the difference of the word. So when people say self-care, I believe that, you know, self-care is your moment to be selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to take care of yourself. And
totally
so like you were saying, you know, if for Thanksgiving, It doesn't always have to, these things don't have to be family based. Right. If that means I'm going to sit home, I'm going to catch up on everything on my DVR, I'm going to watch some Netflix, I'm going to eat the food that I enjoy and not the food that society or somebody else tells me I have to eat, I'm good with that.
But you'd be surprised how many people take vacations during this time of year. And vacations, not a family, like vacations to the Caribbean, vacations to Eastern Europe. People aren't traveling just to get back to or to family members because it's the airlines are having sales.
Yep.
Everybody's traveling. When I saw the statistics and the facts on that, that how many people were just in, I mean, some singles cruises.
Yes.
I was shocked. Happy, but shocked.
I mean, I've even said that I'm going to travel at one point during the holiday. I was like, I'm going to do something different. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something different. And in your book, when you, like you just said, make sure, number one, make sure it's healthy for you and hang around with people who want your company and enjoy your company. I read this, and I'm going to tell you all, I am not an avid reader. And that's the way my mother tells me to say it, because she doesn't like the fact that I say I don't like to read. She like, don't read that, because people think you can't read when you say it. But I'm not an avid reader. And I start from the back of the book. I know. I don't know why, but I do. So when I got Anita's book, I go start from the back. And this stood out to me. It made me giggle. I told people about it as if I had read the whole book. I told people about this one thing. And this is what you wrote, and I love it. My grandfather used to say that when a chicken gives an egg, it's a donation. When a pig gives ham, it's a sacrifice. To what are you giving your future, a donation or a sacrifice? I could have dropped the book, y'all. I'm like, dang.
Yes, he did. And you know, as a young child, I just kind of blew stuff like that off. I don't know what Big Daddy's talking about. He's crazy. I don't know. Because old people talk a lot in parables and psalms, especially in the country. And if you don't hang in there, if you don't continue to repeat it to yourself or hear it as you get older, you will never understand it. But when that saying that my grandfather used to say all the time hit me, it hit me like a ton of bricks.
And I'm, you know what? I'm not going to read the rest that she says in there. Y'all, when I tell you it will change your life, I mean, she talking about making changes, being intentional. What are you doing? Basically, she will look for the women. She will snatch your edges. But when I read that, I'm like, oh, am I giving donations a sacrifice? And then I just sat there and thought about the animals. I'm like, you surely right. You, Grandpa, you are surely right. When a chicken lays an egg, it ain't no problem to them. They lay it and they keep it moving.
That's right.
But oh, a pig. They have no choice in the matter. And so what you're basically saying, and not you, but what your grandfather was basically saying is, are you willing to give freely and be okay and walk away without what you haven't lost anything? Or are you willing to basically sacrifice? And sometimes sacrifice is a choice, but sometimes sacrifice is not a choice. And what are you willing to do with your, what are you willing to do with it?
Because that's in the sacrifice is where the healing occurs.
Right.
In the sacrifice is where the healing occurs. What I find, I also talk about family shaming. And what I find this time of year is when people get so uncomfortable when they find out you're not going to spend the holidays around your family.
Yeah.
But my question is, do you want a friend that is angry and agitated because they've been insulted, dismissed, you know, and abused? Or do you want somebody that's positive and healthy and upbeat? You can't have both. So which one would you choose?
And can you explain to the listeners how to make sure that they are not family shaming?
For all intents and purposes, please stop. If when somebody says to you, no, I'm not going to spend the holidays around my family, or no, I am not going to be around my mother or call my mother for Mother's Day, or same thing with fathers, accept that decision that they've made. Mm-hmm. And stop trying to convince them to do, one, what you think is right, and two, what is comfortable for you, because you don't know the situation you're sending them back into.
Right.
People look at titles and think that titles make people perfect. But remember the family out in California with the 13 kids and the parents would only allow them to shower once a year? Mm-hmm. We all thought that was atrocious and a shame. But if you fast forward 10 years, somebody is going to tell one of those children, well, that's still your mama. You should at least call her for Mother's Day. Let that person heal and deal with their own pain. So stop trying to shame them into your comfort zone.
Mm. Stop trying to shame them into your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And also what I heard you say is, listen to their story, get to know them. Because if you get to know them and listen to their story, then you won't be trying to send them back or shame them into something.
Right.
You'll respect their decision, like you said. So with the holidays approaching, because that's what we've been talking about, what can you tell the listeners to help with their family stress? So for some of the listeners, it's not to this level. And so, you know, they go, but it's still a little stressful. So what kind of assistance or information would you give to them? And then what will you tell the listeners who probably do need to detach?
One, for the listeners who it is survivable. It isn't detrimental to your emotional, mental health. It just bothers you a little bit. You got to shake it off and keep moving. Three steps. One, accept it. Accept the fact that that family member is rude, insulting. Accept the fact that they've been that way for as long as you've known them. So stop hoping that, stop hoping. Accept it. Number two, come up with a defense mechanism or a coping skill that helps you get through those couple of hours or those couple of days. Whether it's deflecting, whether it's counting, okay, that's your third insult, let me go for a walk, or let me go back to the hotel, let me find some place to de-stress because you have heightened my level of agitation. Figure out what your coping or defense mechanism is going to be to survive that. And then number three, have a plan in place for self-care and replenishment when you get done with the holidays. Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, whatever it is that puts you in the midst of people that agitate you, have that plan in place when it's done, when that holiday is done, to put your self-care in action to bring you back to your baseline, your positive, healthy place. Then for the people that need to detach, this is where... See, this is the difference between the donation and the sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Because what you just gave us was the donation.
Right. For the people that need to detach, sit down in your quiet space with no one but yourself and figure out if your presence, your being, your life is worth the other person's abuse, because you're sacrificing your healthiness and your happiness to accept the abuse from that person. So is that something that you are willing to die for? Because little by little, that's what you're doing. Disrespect, dismissal, physical abuse, all of that tears you apart little by little as a human being. What I find so ironic is when it comes to family, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, people can't fathom it. They don't accept it in their mind. But as soon as I switch it and say, okay, if this wasn't my brother, but this was my boyfriend, will we still be having this conversation?
Wow. Yep.
Because if that was my boyfriend beating me, insulting me, being disrespectful and dismissive, you would be looking at me asking, girl, why are you staying there? Why are you taking all of that?
Yeah.
Why is it different?
And I think, like you said, because it's family, and we were taught that family is everything. But like you said, if you switch it, you know, or if it's like that friend that's causing all of this, you know, you would have to detach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so for that one, I mean, I know you gave one point, which was just take some time in a quiet space and really think, how much are you willing to give? Like, but also I think what you mentioned, which was make sure it's healthy for you. I think that would fall under that. And if you are a Christian and a believer, this is where we would say you need to have a quiet space with God and yield and listen to what he's telling you to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I know some people might think, well, God won't tell me to leave my family. Okay.
Well, let's go back to the Bible again.
Right.
Because if you remember Jesus's days, when someone came looking for him in a house and said, hey, your mother and your brothers are looking for you, he said, who are my mother and my brothers? They are those that know the word of the Lord and follow it. Now, does the Bible say that a brother gets to beat his sister? Does the Bible say that the father should test their children and be a homicidal alcoholic? And you can insert your stories into those same sentences.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that you are enduring, does the Bible say that that's okay? If it doesn't, which of these verses are you going to take in to your mental and your emotional health?
Yeah. Wow, listeners, y'all got a lot of work to do. Now, I don't say that like my family is perfect, but I've learned, as everybody else in my family has learned, how to work with each other. Like, we know when we need to retreat to one room or whatever the case may be, we know when we need to leave each other's spaces or houses. Like, we've got it figured out. But at the same time, I will say, which I am very blessed, that my family is 9 times out of 10 a joy to be around.
Yes.
You know, we have our laughter and all of that, and we don't have that one cousin, like you mentioned, we don't have that. And that is a blessing. But for those of you who don't have that, then these are some great things for you to keep in mind, which is the accept how your family is or accept that particular family member. That doesn't mean you make excuses for them. That means you understand this is what they're going to do. So then what do I need to do? Which is the second step, the defense mechanism and the coping. And I like that you mentioned, Anita, the number system. I'm good for you. You got maybe 3 times. At two weeks, I'm stepping away. Mm-hmm. But you know, most people say you got 3 times. Now, my mother would say 1. She'd be like, 1. There's no 2 coming after that. So you know, you have that. And then I think you also mentioned, which was great, which was have that plan for yourself to do your self-care. And I just put to recoup, because as my listeners know, I take notes during my interviews. And so I put to recoup. And because I think that's important, you have to replenish yourself. A water bottle cannot pour water if it's nothing in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think that's great. Now I do want to switch a little bit, because we've been a little heavy. You know, I don't want the listeners to be heavy. I want to switch a little bit and just have you talk a little bit about your TV show that you have.
Oh, in the DC area, particularly Northern Virginia, I have a television show where I interview women that have been through something too. People, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
I interview people that have been through devastating circumstances for them to give the tips and techniques on how they normalized or rise to thrive in life again. And then I also interview experts that help them, because I want to break down the barrier between the population, society, you know, those of us and therapists and counselors that can help us. So when people watch this show, if they see a therapist and they say, oh, okay, you know, therapists are people too, but two, I understand her story. So maybe I'll feel more comfortable talking to this therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the times what I hear is, well, you know, I don't know them, and I'm just walking in to talk to this stranger.
Right.
So hopefully hopefully the interviews that air, and then they also post to my YouTube channel so that people in that are not in the DC area can see them. Hopefully this will break that barrier so that they can see, like I said, therapists are people too. You can hear their stories and relate to them, and you can watch them and see their mannerisms and say, oh, okay, I may be able to talk to that person. That's a person that I would trust to understand my story. And the people that have been through devastating circumstances, I've interviewed the ex-wife of the DC sniper. I've interviewed rape survivors, molestation survivors. I was hoping to get one. She was kidnapped as a child, but we haven't been able to get the dates together yet. But during the interview, we go all in. The first 10 minutes, they're probably relating, telling their story. Mm-hmm. Then the second 10 to 20 minutes, they're specifically telling you how they overcame. Because that's what I want people to really get from the show. We need to lean more on each other with the tips and the techniques that work.
Right.
Instead of trying to suppress and depress everything, because it is, the top is just bubbling over.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to stop that.
Yes. We do.
I know, I understand people say gun control. That's one tactic, but we can also do it from within.
We have to, like you said, we have to start talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to start talking about it and making survivors feel okay. Is the word that keeps coming to mind, and not making them feel like they should not tell their story. Or they should hush, because at the end of the day, it's already for them embarrassing, whether it's a family member, like you mentioned with the DC sniper, his spouse, like that is already on them. They put that on themselves already. We don't need to add to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the more we talk about it, the more prevention we can have, even if it's just, I hear it. So I am now more aware of what I might have to open my eyes to pay attention to what's going on around me.
Yes.
And so I do like that. And I know at least two of the guests that you've had on your show, I have had on the podcast, which is Sharon Lawrence and Takiya Blackman. So I love both of them. They are both great people.
Yes.
And I enjoyed having them on the show. And I know that both of them are very transparent.
Very. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is key. And you mentioned that in the beginning of this episode, is that we have got to get to transparency and understand that it's helpful. And I've always called it an open book. Like I've always told people, I'm an open book. I don't mind telling you about myself or about my childhood or about my father being an alcoholic and these type of things, because those are the things that shape you. And then at the same time, like you said, they help you heal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you don't talk about it, then it's just held inside. And so I think that is great. Now, can you, before I ask you to tell the listeners to find, you know, where they can find your book and where they can watch your show, will you give the listeners three takeaways?
Number one, know above everything else you are worthy. There is nothing you are not worthy of. You are a living, breathing human being, and that in and of itself makes you worthy. That's number one. Number two, self-care is paramount. Whether you're a mom rushing around with children, you're a dad stressed because you feel as if as protector and provider, there's so much on you. You're a grandparent that is raising your grandchildren, whatever that is, know that you have to have self-care. Don't put it off and say, I got to come up with it. Whether you put it on an index card, you paste it on the refrigerator, you schedule it. You know that when this one's at basketball practice, you're going to be in the car doing self-care, whatever that is. And number three, work every day to be more compassionate to your fellow man. You never know what people are thinking. You never know what people are going through. So when they cut you off in traffic, just said, I feel sorry for you. You must be having a bad day. When somebody in the office gets snappy with you, sorry, you're going through what you're going through in your household. You know, don't say it out loud.
Right.
Think these things to yourself and it will help you become a more compassionate and understanding human being for your fellow man. And that will go millions of miles. It will go light years into making us a more civil society.
Those are good. So you all got your three takeaways. You are worthy. I wrote that in all caps. So you need to think about that in all caps. You are worthy. Self-care is paramount. And be more compassionate to your fellow man. And you know what? That one, you talk to me for that. Because I am quick to go off on somebody if they cut me off in traffic. Yes, we are not therapists 24/7. I do not sit there and think about they must be having a bad day. Or they must have just had an argument with their spouse. Mm-hmm. That is not the first thing that comes in my mind. But one thing I do say is, you must really trust me. You must really, really trust me to think that I would not hit you. But hey, so that one I'm going to use for myself. You have really talked to me with that third one. So Anita, let the listeners know where they can find your book at, because your book is a wealth of information. You have a masterclass that goes along with the book. You have worksheets that they can get. So let them know where they can get this book at, as well as where they can watch the show and how they can follow you on any social media platforms.
Please follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. That's Anita Live. That's TheAnitaLive. My website is thatanitalive.com. The book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The masterclass. Pay attention to my social media and my website. If you're interested in the masterclass during the Black Friday holiday, there's going to be something extra special that I'm going to release for that time of year.
Y'all better pay attention. Now she gave you Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and YouTube. So if you don't have one or the other, y'all got enough ways to connect.
And so. I'm a real person. I am not. If you tweet me or DM me, I will get back to you.
There you go. And for my listeners, I know you all get used to me saying, I followed this person on social media and I started watching them. This will be the first time that I did not follow anybody. I did not follow Anita on social media. We had a way that we connected. It worked out well. The book is, like I said, is great. If anything, get the book just so y'all can see what her grandfather say. And don't worry, it's in the back of the book. So if you don't like me, you know, if you like, let me skim through before I decide. Look, I'm telling y'all, go follow her on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Get the Black Friday. I know you mentioned Black Friday holiday for her masterclass. I'm quite sure it's going to be great if it's anything like the book. And then you all can watch her show on YouTube and you can see some of these interviews that she spoke about. Please take heed to what Anita said. Do not stay in something that is dysfunctional. You don't have to. And then definitely reach out to a therapist if you notice some of the things that she mentioned that you're like, that is what's going on with me. Anita, I want to thank you so much for being a guest. It was great.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Off the Couch podcast. Like what you hear? Subscribe to hear more great episodes. And please check out our website at www.talkingoffthecouch.com. And like and follow our Instagram and Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. And until our next episode, remember, it's okay to not be okay. Peace.